The Wake Up Call with Richard Martin, Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. Please be advised that the opinions and views expressed by Richard Martin of GF Investment Services, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent the views of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments based off of Richard Martin's comments are unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener and the investor.
Good morning to you, everybody. This is Richard Martin coming to you from Singapore with your diet of the wake-up call coming Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. And it is Friday, the 8th of July, 2011. Well, Singapore has remained the top destination in the world in terms of attracting immigrants and workers, beating other neighboring and Western economic powerhouses, according to a recent Gallup survey. The survey aims to calculate the member country's potential net migration index, or PNMI, and it was conducted among 350,000 people in some 148 countries from 2007 to 2010. To calculate each country's PNMI, Gallup has subtracted the number of adults who wish to leave the country to the estimated number of people who wish to immigrate and work there. Survey results show that Singapore's population would increase by 219% from 4.8 million to 15 million if everyone who wished to work in the country were allowed in by the government. One of the major considerations cited by the respondents in choosing Singapore is its impressive gross domestic product, or GDP, growth in the past 5 years. Gallup noted. Singapore was followed by New Zealand at plus 148%, Saudi Arabia by 176%, Canada by 160%, and Australia by 148% in the worldwide rankings. On the other hand, the United States ranked 14th on the immigration list. Singapore's neighboring economic superpower, Malaysia, failed to make it to the top 20 countries in the world as workers shy away from its lackluster economy and worsening social divide. Meanwhile, despite strong economic output in the past 3 years, Asian economic superpowers like China and India registered a relatively low appeal to migrant workers, losing at least 6%. More than 1 billion of its population if workers were allowed to move freely by their respective governments. The other Southeast Asian countries that were tagged as the worst destination for migrant workers included Laos at -9%, Vietnam -21%, and the Philippines -22%. Due to decades of war and poor economic condition, Sierra Leone, Haiti, and Zimbabwe were placed at the bottom three in the survey and could potentially lose more than half of its total population if migrants were allowed to move freely. Well, meanwhile, the United States has the highest incarceration rate in the world and the largest total prison population on the entire globe. According to NationMaster.com, the United States has the highest percentage of obese people in the world. It has the highest divorce rate by a wide margin. It is tied with the UK for the most hours of television watched per person each week. The United States has the highest rate of illegal drug use of the entire planet. There are more car thefts in the United States each year than anywhere else in the world, by far. There are more reported rapes each year than anywhere else. There are more reported murders each year than anywhere else. There are more total crimes each year than anywhere else. The United States also has more police officers than anywhere else. It spends much more money on health care as a percentage of GDP than any other nation. The United States has more people on pharmaceutical drugs than any other country. The percentage of women taking antidepressants is higher than in any other country. Americans have more student loan debt than anywhere else. More pornography is created in the United States than anywhere else. 89% is made in the USA and only 11% is made in the rest of the world. The United States has the largest trade deficit in the world every single year. Between December 2000 and December 2010, the United States ran a total trade deficit of $6.1 trillion with the rest of the world, and the U.S. has had a negative trade balance every year since 1976. The U.S. spends 7 times more on the military than any other nation. In fact, U.S. military spending is greater than the military spending of China, Russia, Japan, India, and the rest of NATO combined. It has far more military bases in foreign countries than any other country. It has the most complicated tax system in the world. It's accumulated the biggest national debt that the world has ever seen, which is, of course, as you know, rapidly getting worse. Right now, government debt in the U.S. is expanding at a rate of $40,000 per second. America, ladies and gentlemen, has changed. It has become a nation of uninvolved, self-absorbed bounty seekers, leaving everything else in its wake. USA Today recently reported on the body of a dead woman that was not found for approximately 1 year, even though a whole bunch of people walked right past the car where she died. Bank contractors, inspectors, and even the new owner of a foreclosed home walked past the silver Chevy Nova in the garage numerous times before discovering the former homeowner dead on the front seat. The CBS affiliate in Boston recently reported that a dead woman was lying on the bottom of a public pool for 2 days while large numbers of people swarmed right over her. Marie Joseph, 36, was last seen at the pool on Sunday. The pool was open to the public Monday and Tuesday with 6 lifeguards on duty and no one noticed the body under 12 feet of water. Most Americans have become so self-involved that they barely even notice anyone other than their family and close friends. The love of most Americans is growing cold, and when the collapse of the U.S. economy happens, it's just going to make things worse. Instead of working as a community, most Americans will only be concerned with making sure that their own needs are taken care of. The United States was once the most blessed nation on the face of the earth, but now it is literally falling to pieces. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, again, this is Richard Martin at the Wake Up Call, and if you want to call in with some comments and observations of your own and questions, please feel free to do so. We don't bite here, and we aim to give everybody a fair shake. And provided you can speak the English language relatively competently, we would be glad to hear from you. And in order to do this, you need to call the magic number. And the magic number also happens to be free. It is toll-free at 888-874-4888. Those numbers and those numbers only will bring you to the office of PRN and subsequently to me here in Singapore. Once again, the number is 888-874-4888. 8. Okay, well, if you'd like to call me in private, you can do that, and I urge you to do so. I'm getting a lot of people today calling me about various things, especially some of the things I talk about on the show, which pertain to the adequate deployment of money for the future. And if you would like to call me, I have a direct line in the United States which comes through to Singapore, and it is to be found at a Sarasota, Florida area code 941-441-1682. That's to call me, and if you would like to do that, please do so anytime. Just leave your name and a phone number, and I will call you back if I don't answer the phone. Again, 941-441-1682. Okay. Well, I thought I would mention a little bit more about the money market fund problem. I have actually had several calls, some of them quite incredulous, able to quite grasp the fact that I'm advising you to make one last attempt to talk to your administrators at the money, at your 401k funds, to beseech them and implore them to put a treasury-only money market fund into the menu of choices of your fund, and failing that, I am going to recommend that you take your money out. Now, as I told you, unfortunately, especially for those less than 59 and a half years old, it will probably involve paying a penalty. I have thought long and hard about this, and I feel that under the circumstances that is called for, it's not something you need to do tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., but it is something that you need to do within the foreseeable future. If you want to get around the problem of having to pay the penalty in addition to the tax that you are going to have to pay, and by the way, I think taxes are headed up, so in terms of paying the tax, you might have a better shake by paying taxes now than you would have, say, in 5-10 years' time, when I think taxes will be a lot higher. So it is not necessarily, all is not lost if you actually do have to take this money out. I think that you need to do this, and I don't see any alternative. The idea of buying stocks, which is clearly one of the options that they give you in the menu, or buying bonds, is not appropriate for the kind of economy in which we find ourselves right now. And so if they don't give you a safe repository for your funds, you need really to move out. The largest money market funds in America have allocated an average of about 40% of their assets to European debt securities, most of which are issued by European banks. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is nothing more than concentrated risk-taking. Now, buying European bank commercial paper seems much more beneficial, frankly, to the managers of these money market funds than for the clients of the funds themselves. And according to a Fidelity website, the managers of the $67 billion Fidelity Institutional Prime Money Market Portfolio, for example, charge 14 basis points, which is 0.14% per year, to oversee the fund. The holders of this particular money market fund receive only 12 basis points per year, which is 0.12%. Obviously, if the managers of the Fidelity Institutional Prime Money Market Portfolio didn't load up on European bank debt, they wouldn't be able to pay out a 0.12% per year to the fund's shareholders. But neither would they be able to pay themselves 0.14% per year for doing so. A fee of 0.14% in the case of the Fidelity Institutional Prime Money Market Portfolio amounts to more than $93 million per year. Perhaps the fund managers are earning all 14 basis points of their fees by delivering 12 basis points per year in a zero basis point world. Or perhaps they are merely taking crazy risks for no good reason. But while trying to decide, remember that 12 basis points per year is one basis point per month, a digit that might as well be zero. Who cares about one basis point per month, no matter what the risks may or may not be? Also remember that the Investment Company Institute apparently believes it's well worth the risk to your money to allocate more than 40% of a money market fund's asset to the debt securities of European banks, which in turn have allocated more than 40% of their net equity to the debt securities of Europe's most economically troubled nations. Interestingly, people with the money in these funds are beginning to gauge risk differently from the ICI. Now, I mentioned the dangers of these funds last week. And ladies and gentlemen, it's not just me either. According to JP Morgan, investors withdrew about $85 billion from U.S. prime money market funds last month. And that is huge. It's the equivalent of about 5.6% of total assets under management at such funds. And not surprisingly, Treasury-only money market funds enjoyed a massive $47 billion of inflows at the same time. The Treasury-only funds yield nothing, literally. But the risk of a Greek default and ensuing contagion would pose no risk to those funds, which is why I've recommended them so frequently and vociferously. And of course, here's something else entirely different that bears mentioning. If investors continue withdrawing billions of dollars from prime money market funds, these funds will be forced to withdraw billions of dollars of credit to European banks. If the European banks lose this valuable source of short-term credit, they might start to feel a very uncomfortable liquidity squeeze at the very same moment that the pigs' loans on their balance sheets are tumbling in value. Just this week, Portugal became the second of five pigs' nations to become a junk credit, according to Moody's Investors Service. Greece was the first. Data points do not make a trend, but they do make two data points that are pointing in a bad direction. Wouldn't you think in a 0% world, cash managers would resign themselves to earning nothing for clients when nothing, approximately, is what the market is offering? One would imagine that cash managers would be busy improving their golf games. One would be wrong. Instead of playing golf, the cash managers are busy groping for yield, as they say. Money market funds have become a lot more exciting than they ought to be. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I do my best, you know. I do as much research as I can in your best interests, but I can only lead the charming horse to the water. I can't make it drink, so the rest is up to you, my friends. Please note. This is a very bad situation indeed. All right. Well, I've mentioned this, turning to something completely different here. I've mentioned this before, and I'm going to mention it again, but here's a question for you all. Let's see how many of you can get the answer right. What is the one day in the 20th century which was probably a turning point for the United States fortunes, economic and otherwise, and the specific event on that day which turned the fortunes around for the United States definitely and forever. There's one date in time that needs to be borne in mind for that purpose. It's a very specific date, and it only happened once. Well, Here's the answer. The 15th of August, 1971, just before 12 noon. Now, if you didn't get that answer right, and now you know what the answer is, do you know what happened on that date at that time? Well, Richard Nixon signed the order which put an end to the gold standard once and for all. Now, I'm going to talk a little about this. I haven't really mentioned it in any great detail before. I've mentioned the fact that the gold standard was the discipline which kept the Federal Reserve from being able to print money with gay abandon, simply because the amount of money in circulation had to equal the amount of gold held by the federal government at Fort Knox. But because of the needs for funds of the Vietnam War, Richard Nixon was persuaded to release the Federal Reserve from the requirement to maintain the money supply at a rate which would be covered by the value of gold, and of course the rest is history. Now, the abandonment of the gold standard in 1971 is closely tied to the massive unemployment the industrialized world has suffered in recent years. And Mexico, even with a lower level of industrialization than in developed countries, has also lost jobs due to the closing of industries. In recent years, the creation of new jobs in productive activities has been anemic at best. In the early months of 1971, Henry Hazlitt, a solid classical economist, predicted that the dollar would have to be devalued. He said it would be necessary to increase the number of dollars that would be needed to obtain an ounce of gold from the United States Treasury. And what Henry Hazlitt never imagined was that instead of devaluing the currency, which was the recommendation of Paul Samuelson, who was, by the way, a Nobel Prize winner in economics, and that was published the week before, August the 15th, 1971, President Nixon took the advice of Milton Friedman and declared that from that time forward, the U.S. would no longer redeem dollars held by the world's central bank at any price. Now, the U.S. unilaterally violated the terms of Bretton Woods, and in fact, that was actually financial bankruptcy, but nobody will ever admit it. And since then, all world trade, or most of it, as the euro, the pound sterling, and to a lesser extent the yen, all compete with the dollar, is conducted using dollars that are nothing more than fiat money, or fake money, if you like. And because all the other currencies in the world were bound to go through the dollar, the immediate consequence was that the simultaneous fact is that they also became fiat money, fake money, if you like, with no backing. Well, the consequences of that fateful day, August the 15th, 1971, have overthrown all order and harmony in economic relations among the nations of the world, ladies and gentlemen. While facilitating and expediting the global expansion of credit, because part of the dollars exported by the U.S. ended up in the reserves of central banks around the world. As the loss of gold ceased to be a limiting factor, the last restrictions on the expansion of credit were stripped away. A heavy flow of dollars to all parts of the world spurred the expansion of global credit, which didn't stop until 2007. The U.S., which paid the rest of the world with its own irredeemable dollars of no intrinsic value, lauded the adoption of free trade and globalization. The U.S. could buy whatever it wanted, anywhere in the world, in any quantity, and at any price. Starting in the 1990s, its export deficits became alarming, but nothing was done to reduce them. On the contrary, they grew year by year. Free trade is unquestionably beneficial for humanity at large. It is good to be able to buy goods where they are cheapest. Some countries enjoy conditions that favor them in production of certain things. Each country should produce those things in which it has an advantage over other countries. Thus, the whole world could benefit from the good things each country has to offer. It is an appealing and sound doctrine. But there is a crucial catch. The doctrine of free trade was conceived for a world where the sole means of payment was gold. When the doctrines of free trade and the comparative advantages of nations were developed, the economists of the day couldn't imagine a world that didn't use gold, but instead relied on a fiat money that could be created at will by a single country. The so-called globalization of the 1980s and 1990s and to date is based on the ideas of free trade. However, in the absence of the gold standard that existed when the doctrine was conceived, globalization had completely destructive results, which have caused the de-industrialization of the West and the rise to power of Asia. I don't have to tell you how many industries, large and small, have ceased to exist in the US and the West in general because Chinese competition killed them. You all know as well how hard it is to find a product that can be produced at a profit in the developed countries. It is very difficult to find a niche for any product to be manufactured locally. The flight of factories to Asia to take advantage of lower wages caused unemployment where local factories were closed. For the same reason, job creation is slow or non-existent. The gold standard imposed order and harmony. If President Nixon had not closed the gold window in 1971, the world would be radically different today. Everything changed because the United States, having removed gold from the world monetary system, could pay everything in dollars. And without the gold standard as a limiting institution, it could print dollars willy-nilly without limit. Thus, in the 1970s, the United States started to buy huge amounts of high-quality products from Japan, while the Japanese boasted, "Japan sells, Japan does not buy." A situation that was impossible under the gold standard became perfectly possible under the fiat dollar standard. The Japanese became gigantic producers, their country an island transformed into a factory. Japan accumulated vast reserves of dollars sent from the U.S. in exchange for Japanese products. This in turn triggered the deindustrialization of the U.S. It is no coincidence that some analysts have observed that in real terms, American workers have had no real increase in their income since 1970. Today, the situation is far worse. China, with a population of 1.3 billion, has become a formidable power. No one can compete with China in price. China sells vast quantities of goods to the rest of the world without the rest of the world having any chance of selling similar quantities to China. China can do so because today trade deficits are paid not in gold, but in dollars or euros or pound sterling or yen, which will never become scarce. They're created at will by the USA, the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, or the Bank of Japan. A fearful monster has been created as a consequence of the elimination of the gold standard, which imposed a limit. You can only sell to those who sell to you. You can only buy from those who buy from you. This limit no longer applies. Everything is disarray, inequality, imbalance. Structural imbalance prevails because we no longer have the gold standard. Richard Nixon's elimination of the gold standard has proven to be the U.S.'s best possible strategic gift to China and the rest of Asia. Today, China has a colossal industrial base that might have taken centuries to build, while the U.S. is, to a great extent, devoid of factories and incapable of reclaiming its former glory. How tragic a fate for the U.S. All right, ladies and gentlemen, our engineer is chomping at the bit to have a break, and I agree with him, so a break we shall have, and I will be right back.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network, your voice for independent views.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No, don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
Shut it off. I said not to play it.
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny.
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the Mama Grizzly won't tear off your limbs.
Cheater in the Rude, Thursdays, 8 p.m., Progressive Radio Network.
Join me, Rachel Trachtenberg, for Rachel Trachtenberg's Pure Imagination. This is a show for everyone from our perspective as teens. Current events, art as life, music, and politics. Rachel Trachtenberg's Pure Imagination.
With co-host Julia Cunning.
Wednesdays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Not bad.
Not too shabby.
Why should you be listening to the Progressive Radio Network? Here are a few hosts that call PRN home. Award-winning investigative journalist and documentary filmmaker Michael Rupert. Acclaimed theoretical physicist Michio Kaku. Notable media critic and international journalist, the news dissector, Danny Schechter. Leading progressive journalists such as Stephen Ledman, John Rappaport, and Glenn Ford have also found a home with us. We also have advice from Richard Martin on how to protect yourself from the ongoing financial collapse. John Mueller tells us his firsthand account on moving out of the U.S. and making a new life for himself in another country on his show, The Expat Files. Along with all these informative programs, we also have health shows hosted by America's top doctors like Mayor Eisenstein, Cheryl Selman, and, of course, Gary Null. The Progressive Radio Network is the place for news and information.
A state of emergency. No, it's not. It's more of a state of urgency. I'm Danny Schechter. I'm your news dissector. I'm on the radio Fridays at 1 p.m. right here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, offering a different narrative to the news, challenging what we're hearing, what we're seeing, what we're reading, offering another way of understanding what's going on. Join me online on MediaChannel.org and join me here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com Fridays at 1 p.m. Be there or be square.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, looks like we're back here. I didn't give an indication, but I believe that is the case. I just would like to read you one email that I got from Laurie, who says, "Hi, Richard. Thanks for the heads up regarding 401k plans. You are suggesting that unless fund administrators agree to offering a treasury bill-only fund for the 401k plans, that people withdraw their money. I was under the impression that unless employees leave a company, they are not allowed to withdraw money from their plans or even roll them over into an IRA. Is that incorrect? Thanks for the clarification, Laurie. In principle, Laurie, that is correct. On the other hand, I have known of cases where the administrators have agreed to release the funds. And, of course, if you have exceptional circumstances of which illness is one, buying a house is another, you can not only withdraw the funds, but you don't have to pay the penalty. So you might want to, first of all, find out what the administrators will allow, and secondly, look into the different ways in which you might be able to get that money out. But they have to understand, these administrators, that if they're not prepared to offer you security, then you can't be expected to leave your money in the fund. So I think that you have a case, and I think that there's a very good chance that you might win this one. Then I get from Andy Celsius, for your reaction to money market fund action, and then saying below is the reaction I received from an acquaintance who works as a wealth manager. He writes, I really don't. I don't quite know what that means, but anyway, he says, 401k administrators have stable value funds and guaranteed investment contracts in addition to money market funds. Most investors should have 50% of their 401k assets in equities if they want to live comfortably in retirement. Many 401k plans are offering ETFs as well, so they can own gold or commodity funds. Many will also have money parked in short-term U.S. government bond funds as well. Best regards, Andy. Well, thank you, Andy, for that. But, of course, that shows the obscene ignorance of these people. First of all, stable value funds are indeed insurance based. So if the insurance company goes out of business, then your stable value fund goes poof. Most investors having 50% of their 401k equities in equities, assets in equities, that speaks for itself. The absurdity of that is just something that leaves my jaw dropped open. If the economy is going to hell and your stock market is going to collapse, why should a person want to lose 50% of their money in equities? I don't get the reasoning on that. In the long run, as Keynes said, you know, we're all dead. So you won't be in retirement, my good friend, Mr. Wealth Manager. You'll be dead. You'll be 6 feet under by the time the stock market comes back to where you left it, where you so kindly told everybody to leave 50% of their money in it. Same goes for gold or commodity funds. What if commodities drop? What if gold drops? U.S. government bond funds. What if the bond market drops because the rating of the U.S. at AAA goes down to, you know, well, somebody's talking about D here if they don't increase the debt ceiling, but even if it goes to B or BBB, or, you know, the interest rates will soar and the value of the bond funds will collapse. This is madness of the first order, and I don't know what kind of wealth, you know, this wealth manager is managing, but quite frankly, you want to treat this with very, very great suspicion, Andy, and I certainly am grateful to you for bringing it to our attention, because you know, it needed to be scotched pretty fast. All right. Here, and ladies and gentlemen, you know I've been talking to you about this whole business of idea that the press don't always level with you, and they're not always honest. I have a little story about something which I think shows unmistakably that an important member of the government is lying to you. It's just another example of where the government seems to be misleading you, what I would describe as a deliberate measure to support the interests of the moneyed classes as opposed to the interests of people who sign on, like your good selves. In an article entitled U.S. Home Prices Unlikely to Fall Further from Bloomberg, the Housing and Urban Development Secretary Sean Donovan said on CNN, and I quote, "Homes in the U.S. are the most affordable they've been in decades, and prices may start to climb as soon as the third quarter. it's very unlikely that we will see a significant further decline. The real question is, when will we start to see sustainable increases? Some think it will be as early as the end of this summer or this fall. Home sales have increased in 6 out of the past 9 months, and the number of property owners in default is declining. Donovan said on CNN's State of the Union program, housing prices will begin rising as the number of foreclosures declines. In the long run, there's a heavy clue for you, it's a good time to buy. It's so affordable today compared to where it's been for generations. The long run, huh? Well, remember, as I told you a few minutes ago, what Keynes said, in the long run, we're all dead. Well, here are a few of the things our poor urban development secretary missed. Oh, and in addition, he must have mislaid his current copy of the data. Atlanta Business Chronicle, for example, writing in an article entitled Equifax Study Points to Continued Housing Woes, has this to say. The economic recovery following the Great Recession has been hampered by a weakened housing market, a new study from Atlanta-based Equifax Inc. shows. Equifax's national credit trend research for May found mortgage delinquencies still exceeded pre-recession levels due to ongoing instability in the mortgage marketplace. High shadow inventory levels are contributing to the continued rise of severe mortgage delinquencies and write-offs, the company noted. According to Equifax research, write-off dollars for home finance, which includes first mortgage and home equity installment loans, as well as home equity revolving accounts, are still climbing and have yet to show signs of peaking. Home finance write-offs reached $304.6 billion in 2010, compared with a combined total of $126.7 billion for 2006 and 2007. The study also found first mortgage real estate owned, that's REO, rates remaining high as lenders struggle to divest of properties unsuccessfully sold through a short sale or foreclosure auction. REO rates since March are on the rise and causing continued economic strain, Equifax said. Well, how about the Associated Press, which also has the following comment in an article entitled Home Buyer Reality Check. It's a buyer's market. Why are so few people buying houses? One of the key reasons is falling prices. Although lower prices encourage true bargain hunters to look for deals, they can also scare off home buyers who fear the bottom has yet to come. And between the two, anxiety is winning. This spring, home prices in major cities were back to the same levels reported in the summer of 2003. Although prices in several locations are beginning to rise again, even with the increases, housing remains the weakest part of the U.S. economy. Prices won't fully recover until the glut of foreclosures for sale is reduced, companies start hiring in greater numbers, banks ease lending rules, and more people get comfortable again with buying a house. Well, Housing Wire says, quoting Radar Logic, don't be fooled by higher May home sales. Pending home sales may have grown 8.2% between April and May, but a housing recovery remains a way off, real estate analytics firm Radar Logic said this week. Radar Logic picked apart the latest pending home sales report, saying 8.2% month-over-month sales growth does not equate to a recovery when sales are down 20.4% from last year when consumers rushed to buy to take advantage of federal tax credits. Instead, Radar Logic concluded that May's pending home sales remain essentially flat. Furthermore, an influx of distressed properties, including many that are still waiting to come online, remain a constant threat to market confidence and home prices, according to the report. Regardless of what may happen to sales contract activity in any given month, the fact remains that the inventory of homes for sale and in the foreclosure pipeline far outstrips current demand, Radar Logic said. Potential buyers are cognizant of this fact and the negative impact it will have on future home price appreciation and are therefore choosing to stay out of the market. As long as the supply overhang persists, it will weigh on housing demand. Well, if that's not enough, how about Mortgage News Daily, again quoting CoreLogic in a piece called CoreLogic 10.9 million borrowers are underwater. Approximately 22.7% of all U.S. homeowners were in a negative equity position with their mortgages at the end of the first quarter of 2011, down slightly from 23.1% in the fourth quarter of 2010. In a report released Tuesday, CoreLogic states that some 10.9 million borrowers are underwater, i.e. owe more on their mortgages than their property is worth, and another 2.5 million borrowers, that's 5%, were in a near negative equity position, which the real estate data and analytics company defines as having less than 5% positive equity. While the drop in housing prices caused much of the negative equity, equity extraction was also a key driver. Borrowers with second mortgages on their home were twice as likely to suffer negative equity as those with only one lien. 18% of borrowers without home equity loans were underwater, while 38% of borrowers with home equity loans were in a negative position. A total of 4.5 million negative equity borrowers, that's 40%, have home equity or other junior liens. And then we come to none other than the New York Times in an article entitled Big Banks Easing Terms on Loans Deemed as Risks. As millions of Americans struggle in foreclosure with little hope of relief, big banks are going to borrowers who are not even in default and cutting their debt or easing the mortgage terms, sometimes with no questions asked. Two of the nation's biggest lenders, J.P. Morgan Chase and Bank of America, are quietly modifying loans for tens of thousands of borrowers who haven't even asked for help. And finally, from Flathead Beacon, in an article entitled No Definitive Signs of Improvement in Housing, a recent housing report by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research comes up to a sobering conclusion. 3 years into its real estate slump, Montana's housing markets do not yet show any definitive signs of improvement. The report includes all the familiar words Montanans have learned to accept as reality. Foreclosures, declining prices, debt. And the words may have to stay in our everyday vocabulary for a while longer. Even as the rest of the state economy swings to growth, the data clearly portray the 2010 year as another year of adjustment and correction in Montana's housing markets, the report states. Well, there you are, ladies and gentlemen. I think I've done my homework on this one. I have to ask myself, could the eminent secretary of HUD be simply lying? Nah. Perish the thought. Well, to give you some idea of what conscientious reporters are up against in the mainstream media when it comes to telling it as it is, Chris Hedges, many of you will have heard about, has become very well known for his contrarian views and opinions in recent years. Chris Hedges worked at the New York Times for 15 years, and this is what he had to say. The Times, like Harvard University, where I attended graduate school, is one of the country's most elite and exclusive institutions. Its ethos can best be summed up with the phrase, "You are lucky to be here." That huge numbers of people at the Times, as at Harvard, buy into this institutional hubris makes the paper, where I spent 15 years, nearly all of them, thankfully, as a foreign correspondent a few thousand miles from the newsroom, a fear-ridden and oppressive place to work. The Times newsroom, like most corporate nerve centers, is a labyrinth of intrigue, gossip, backbiting, rumor, false piety, rampant ambition, betrayal, and deception. Those who play this game well are repugnant. They are also usually the people who run the place. When you allow an institution to provide you with your identity and sense of self-worth, you become an obsequious pawn, no matter how much talent you may possess. You live in perpetual fear of what those in authority think of you and might do to you. This mechanism of internalized control, for you always need them more than they need you, is effective. The rules of advancement at the paper are never clearly defined or written down. Careerists pay lip service to the stated ideals of the institution, which are couched in lofty rhetoric about balance, impartiality, and neutrality, but astutely grasp the actual guiding principle of the paper, which is, do not significantly alienate the corporate and political power elite on whom the institution depends for access and money. Those who master this duplicitous game do well. Those who cling tenaciously to a desire to tell the truth, even at the cost to themselves and the institution, become a management problem. This creates tremendous friction within the paper. I knew reporters with a conscience who would arrive at the paper and vomit in the restroom from nervous tension before starting work. So I guess we're all lucky to have the benefits of PRN. I don't know how long it will last, and I'm hoping that PRN will last a long, long time. But judging by what's happened to the mainstream liberal or alternative or progressive media, you have to wonder. Oh, well, such is life. Okay, well, I see we have no questions coming in as of yet, so I shall proceed with the next matter in hand, which is basically, I think, a comment about what's happening to workers who are being laid off through no fault of their own will, not being eligible for any of the extended unemployment benefits layoff victims have received from the federal government since 2008. And that's actually after this week. The states typically provide the first 26 weeks of unemployment insurance, and Congress has provided extensions during every recession since the 1950s. But the current extensions, which give the unemployment an unprecedented 73 additional weeks of aid in some states, are set to expire at the beginning of January. There's a real potential cliff coming for unemployed people. The federal unemployment programs all expire at the end of this year. This means that anyone who is laid off on July the 1st or later will only receive state benefits unless Congress acts to keep these needed programs up and running. And quite frankly, it's not incredibly likely that Congress will be in the mood to keep these programs up and running with Republicans in control of the House. So expect to see a lot more crime, a lot more people running around with very little to show for themselves. And I think this program will get worse and worse over the next few months. And by this time next year, ladies and gentlemen, I don't think anybody will be asking whether or not we're in a depression. I don't think anybody will have any doubt that the so-called euphemistically described double dip has in fact transformed itself into a fully-fledged recession. But be that as it may, let me mention about the European banks, which have recently been deemed to, rather up to one in six of European banks are deemed set to fail an EU-wide financial health check, according to Eurozone sources close to the stress testing, as officials scramble to set up backstops for those at risk. The results, which the European Central Bank and others hope will persuade investors that the European Union is finally coming clean about the extent of its banks' problems, will put pressure on reluctant states to prop up lenders if they cannot raise money themselves. The Eurozone sources said that the European Banking Authority is set to announce within weeks that between 10 and 15 of the 91 banks being scrutinized in the tests had failed, with casualties expected in Greece, Germany, Portugal, and Spain. The checks will provide the first picture of the health of the region's banks since a previous round a year ago was deemed too lax. In that round, Ireland's banks were all given a clean bill of health just months before their difficulties drove the country to seek an international bailout. The new checks will measure how well the core capital that banks rely on to absorb losses, such as unpaid loans, holds up when exposed to an economic dip or fall in property prices. They also gauge the impact on banks should the bonds they own, issued by states such as Greece, lose value. But the tests stop short of assessing the full impact of a country default, including the likely resultant freeze in interbank lending. Well, so get ready for some bank failures, defaults. They're all in the pipeline, ladies and gentlemen. I am not going to say that it's very difficult to imagine that this will happen as soon as Greece implodes, because these weak banks will immediately implode themselves. That is the nature of the Armageddon that awaits us. Well, Lawrence Lindsay, former assistant to George Bush for economic policy, had this to say recently, and I quote, "Underestimating the long-term budget situation is an old game in Washington, but never have the numbers been this large. There is no way to raise taxes enough to cover these problems. The tax the rich proposals of the Obama administration raise about $700 billion, less than a fifth of the budgetary consequences of the excess economic growth projected in their forecast. The whole $700 billion collected over 10 years wouldn't even cover the difference in interest costs in any one year at the end of the decade between current rates and the average cost of Treasury borrowing over the last 20 years. Only serious long-term spending reduction in the entitlement area can begin to address the nation's deficit and debt problems. It should no longer be credible for our elected officials to hide the need for entitlement reforms behind rosy economic and budgetary assumptions. And while we should all hope for a deal that cuts spending and raises the debt ceiling to avoid a possible default, bondholders should be under no illusions. Under government current policies and economic projections, they should be far more concerned about a return of their principal in 10 years than about any short-term delay in a coupon payment in August." Well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, even when you have members of the opposition party who used to be high-powered executives in the previous administration, making comments, they don't usually come quite as clear as this. And quite frankly, it's a warning to us all. You know, there's plenty of these warnings out there. And I bring them to you, and whether or not you remember them or take them seriously, they're there for all to see. And anybody who doubts that we are about to hit an unprecedented obstacle in the road in the form of a complete and thorough financial meltdown is deluding themselves. And I hope that doesn't include any of you. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end. Another hour has gone by, and I have to bid you adieu, and I wish you all a wonderful weekend, and I shall be back on Monday, same place, same time. This is Richard Martin saying, bye-bye till then.